when you open the door for somebody else.
Welcome back to the Vaccine Conversation with Melissa and Dr. Bob. We are here for our part two of the Pfizer corporate rap sheet, talking about the pneumococcal vaccine, talking about Oprah and her wellness tour for 2020, and how we have uncovered some dirty little secrets that Pfizer has and what they've done over time and how they've been misleading the public and had lawsuits, federal claims and lawsuits for wrongdoing. And we need Oprah to be accountable for her association with this company. And we want you guys to be aware of what this company's doing and learn more about the pneumococcal vaccine. If you haven't heard part one of this episode, make sure to check that out. And we'll continue going with episode two.
Yeah. What's the next thing that you have on the rap sheet, Melissa?
The following year after that, 2004, they had to pay $430 million, criminal and civil charges. So look at that now, criminal charges, okay, that it paid physicians. This is where the ethics comes into this. Yeah. They paid physicians to prescribe an epilepsy drug to patients with ailments that the medication was not approved for.
Wow.
So they were paying physicians to go ahead and use this particular drug, which is called Neurontin. I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, Neurontin. It's a very popular pediatric seizure drug.
Okay, so they are actually paying physicians to actually prescribe that drug to cure or heal or treat other ailments that it was not ever designed for. And it said documents later came to light suggesting that Pfizer arranged for delays in the publication of scientific studies that would have proved you're not supposed to be using them for that reason. So there was malintent.
Wow. Yeah.
At this point, this is probably why they got hit with criminal and civil charges and such a high amount, $430 million. Mm-hmm. And this was a federal jury that found them. And this is what in 2010, they were committed with racketeering fraud. This is a big deal.
Wow. Wow.
For people that don't understand like what that means, this is, you know, racketeering is an organized criminal act where you're earning money illegally. And it's also quoted as deceitful service to fix a problem that otherwise wouldn't exist. So they're essentially creating these things and creating the solution for these things, but the problem never existed in the first place. It kind of sounds like measles mania, right?
Yeah,
you create the problem so you can find the solution to even though the problem really never existed. Right. So in addition to that $430 million, they had to pay an additional $142 million in damages. In 2007, they had to pay federal charges for illegally marketing a human growth hormone. In 2009, okay, now this is where it gets crazy. 2009, they paid, at that point, the largest settlement ever. Do you want to know how much it is? Don't look, don't you dare.
Looked, sorry, too late. Is it around $2.3
Stop
billion?
Stop it. $2.3 billion. Again, criminal, civil charges. And this was for improper marketing of Bextra and three other medications. So four medications total. And this amount was a record healthcare fraud settlement. Okay, we're talking about healthcare fraud. We're talking about misleading advertising, false claims, paying physicians to prescribe medication. This is not the kind of company that you want your name associated with when this is resulting in injury and death of patients.
Yeah.
Okay, this speaks to the mission of this company, the mission statement, what they believe in, how they conduct business. We're talking about claim after claim after claim. So here's what one of the company employees said in this lawsuit for $2.3 billion, okay? One of the employees who was a former sales representative that brought this federal investigation, this is what he said, quote, "The whole culture of Pfizer is driven by sales. And if you didn't sell drugs illegally, you were not seen as a team player."
Seriously?
This is the culture of this company. Selling drugs illegally, which means false advertising, misleading claims, lying about safety information, keeping safety information from both the FDA and from the public. And how concerning is that, that the culture was so clear as an employee, you knew you had to play the game to stay there.
Yeah. And I've talked to a couple of, or actually several patients and friends who used to be pharma reps, and They went into it thinking, yeah, they're going to do great work, educate doctors about great treatments and new medications and help patients. And one person in particular was just telling me story after story about how that's what she thought going into it. And what it turned out to be was just basically schmoozing doctors to get them to agree to prescribe things.
Right.
She found doctors didn't even really want to learn from her or even like hear the science or the studies. Mm. The doctors were just like, oh yeah, just, you know, give me your, you know, give me the samples and
right.
you know, thank you. And then,
and I'll
you know,
promote it.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I'll come to the dinner you're hosting, you know, at the end of the month and hear the lecture about it. And, they used to give us, you know, they used to give doctors a lot of, you know, giveaways, and they don't do that anymore. But yeah, I was surprised to hear that doctor after doctor that she would go to see to try to educate about the science and the medicine of their products. Doctors didn't want to hear any of that. They just wanted to say, oh, tell me what the drug is, tell me what it does. And
right.
yeah, sure. I'll
and what do I get for getting people to
yeah,
use it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, okay. So after, this big, huge lawsuit in 2009, here's an interesting stop reading. Oh my gosh. I'm going to have to take away your
I'm
iPad in 2010.
Stop telling me to stop reading.
I would stop telling okay. you that if you were stopping the reading that you're doing. Okay. See how this works?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So 2010, Pfizer discloses. Now this I find really interesting. This is the first time the company had made this public, that they had spent over $20 million on close to 5,000 doctors to speak on their behalf. So they had mm-hmm. paid $20 million for doctors to go around speaking on promoting this company.
Which is okay. I mean, doctors are doing like educational, you know, discussions. And I've been to a number of those dinners. I'd say uh-huh. that in and of itself there's not anything really wrong with that if they're just talking, if they're talking true science.
But I think
they're sharing facts, just as a doctor giving an educational lecture to people.
Right. But this is paying them to speak on their behalf seems more like they're paying them to tell everybody this is the drug to take and this is
right.
what you
yeah,
have to
I
do.
Think it depends on the message.
When you have a history of all this false advertising and illegally getting, you know, doctors involved that shouldn't have been a part of it, like we said earlier, I think it kind of becomes more of an issue of advertising, not so much based on the content.
Yeah,
you're
right. I mean, I'll admit that my impression whenever I went to those dinners, you know, at the end of the dinner, at the end of the what seemed like an educational lecture, at the end of it, I was like, oh yeah, that medication or that treatment or that device or that
right.
that approach sounds great. Yeah, maybe I think I'll start trying that in my office because mm-hmm. the science message he's telling me sounds correct and seems accurate. And it definitely did influence my decision-making. I think it does. Mm-hmm. Doctors, they're creatively presented, I think.
Right.
So the doctor kind of thinks they're hearing science, but you're right. A lot of it is geared as an advertisement to convince you. And I'll say it would
it
affect
worked.
Me in that
it
way
worked.
As well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so after this, 2011, they had to pay federal charges for illegally marketing a bladder drug that they have. Mm. The same year, they had to take down stuff on their website because of Lipitor, which is a cholesterol medication, right? Mm-hmm. Misleading statements. I mean, do you see the theme here with Pfizer? It's
right.
constant misleading false claims. In 2012, they had to pay almost $500 million in a lawsuit because of improper marketing of a kidney transplant drug. I mean, this is just case after case after case. And there is something else that kind of came up, which I thought was really disturbing, which happened in the year 2000, and this became a human rights issue. Mm. They were testing a dangerous new antibiotic that was called Trovan on children in Nigeria without receiving consent from their parents.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, so this is in 2000. This was the Washington Post that published a huge expose about this. And Pfizer ended up having to go to court about this. And the Nigerian families accused the company of using their children as human guinea pigs. There were 30 families that went to court with them. They did prove that Pfizer had violated international law. And again, this is an ethics issue. So we know that somebody like Oprah, who has spent so much time in Africa building schools for her, for the girls and trying to help these children come out of bad situations. We're looking now at families in Nigeria that were used. And this is largely unknown. People don't really know about this. they were tested on with not, you know, with no prior consent. Their parents didn't even know about it. They were given this stuff without even the informed consent that we're talking about fighting for, and clearly had some kind of negative outcomes, or else they wouldn't be doing this, you know, huge lawsuit. So again, 30 families, they had to pay over $75 million in the Nigerian courts, which I'm sure is a really high amount in that circumstance. They even found out, though, that the U.S. State Department found out through WikiLeaks that Pfizer had tried to dig up dirt on the Nigerian attorney general just so they could try to make this lawsuit go away.
Wow.
And so they were using these tactics that we hear about over and over and over with a powerful industry trying to, because this is bad press. This is bad press for them that they're using children to test these drugs out. And of course, they're using them in Nigeria where it's like, who's going to say anything, right? They're not necessarily doing that here because can you imagine the uproar? And how wrong is that, that they're taking advantage of these types of countries and the children and families there that don't have the means to fight back? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, thank goodness that these families did take them to court and they did have to be accountable for this. But again, you know, the public doesn't necessarily know that this kind of stuff is happening. This is in addition to all the other stuff I was reading. Yeah. And then the last thing I wanted to say in this corporate rap sheet that I found was there was an employee of Pfizer in 2010 that was actually awarded over $1 million. They were a scientist that worked for them that they claimed, this is a woman who was sickened by a genetically engineered virus that they were working on. She was sickened and then they fired her when she came to them with safety concerns.
Wow.
So if you're an employee, you realize something is dangerous. You come to them and say, hey, we've got a problem. Mm-hmm. And then they fire you for that. If you think that's the only time it's ever happened, obviously, you know, you're wrong. With a company this large and these kind of profits, the illegal, like you're saying, if you're not selling these illegally, you're not playing by the team rules that they want. Yeah. This is, you know, issue after issue after issue of just unethical practices that we're seeing in a company that is making a childhood vaccine, and they're also getting the ACIP to universally recommend something for all adults. Now they're partnering with Oprah on a health and wellness tour. So listening to the stuff I just told you, would you ever want to support a company like this on a health and wellness tour across the nation?
The irony is crazy. And, you know, what's interesting about the Prevnar vaccine specifically is it's very unique. It's very unlike other vaccines in that it's multi-strain.
Right.
The first version they did, what they made was had 7 strains in it. And then it's 13 strains now. Other countries, I think Canada had a 12-strain version. And now, gosh, they're working on a 20-strain version. The problem with these multi-strain vaccines is, to me, the reason I'm so uncomfortable with it now, and I used to be more of an advocate for pneumococcal vaccine, multi-strain. I thought, oh, it's a great idea to give someone immunity to, you know, multiple strains of pneumococcal bacteria. So if they catch the germ, they're not going to get as sick. I thought it was a great idea. But the problem is it's artificially created. It's not a natural germ. It's a very artificial version of the germ. And it's injected into you, so it's given in a very artificial manner instead of presented to your respiratory tract naturally. So it's injected into your muscle, goes into your bloodstream, and 13 different strains, and soon to come 20 different strains of the bacterial proteins are presented to your immune system.
At one time.
Yeah, at one time. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen in nature.
Right.
It's a completely artificial process. And our immune systems really freak out when you do something artificial to them, mm-hmm. when something goes wrong and it's very unexpected. So yeah, the vaccine might create antibodies in your bloodstream as it's reacting to the vaccine. We know in the elderly, those antibodies don't work. Maybe those work a little bit better in children. So maybe the vaccine does work. And that's not so much of the argument in kids. Mm-hmm. But what else does it do to you? And I see babies. You know how babies used to get extremely irritable and fussy and scream for hours, like with the old DTP vaccine, mm-hmm. the old whole cell vaccine? And they still do that somewhat with the acellular DTAP vaccine. They also do that with pneumococcal vaccine. There's a lot, the screaming and fussiness They actually warn people 8 out of 10 babies are going to cry and be very irritable and you know, different degrees of crying, not just minor fussiness, but 8 out of 10 babies will have very significant crying.
And people are hearing this going, okay, well, they cry because just a little injection, but that's not the kind of crying you're talking
about. It's so irritating. It's so irritating to the immune system. Like, you know, when you catch a flu, you get really achy, or if you get sick or fever, you get headache, your body aches, joint aches. That's your immune system reacting to something. And people might look at that as a good thing. Yeah, good. Your immune system's reacting to the 13 strains in this vaccine. But because it's an artificial reaction, right. I'm not so sure that that's a very healthy reaction. So I don't advocate for this vaccine anymore, you know, nearly as much as I used to, because not because I don't think it doesn't work in kids, but again, I think the reactions are maybe more concerning than a lot of people know. So I'm more neutral on this vaccine when it comes to kids.
Well, then also with adults, they're giving pneumococcal with the flu shot time. Yeah. And the CDC already warns about the combination of pneumococcal and flu vaccine for children.
In children,
increases your risk of seizures.
Seizures, right.
Yeah. And so we know that giving those two together is not really the best idea. If it's happening to children, there's obviously some potential risk there for adults, and they're always offering them together now at these physicals. Yeah. And if you're in the hospital, for anything, you break your ankle, they're going to come in and be like, did you get your flu vaccine?
Yeah.
Did you get this? And
did you get your pneumococcal vaccine?
Yeah. Right. And I remember the CDC finding some CDC document where they're actually looking, like they have slides that tell you every time somebody's in the hospital, it's an opportunity to make sure they're up to date.
Yeah.
It's not about whether that person needs it or is at a risk, you know, risk group. Oh, the other thing, and I don't have all my regular notes, the other thing that they said in the ACIP meeting that I wanted to tell you and talk about here was they were saying how it's just easier to universally recommend something than to do it based on risk groups.
Absolutely.
And so if we think about what that means everything that's on the schedule for children now to universally recommend is not based on need. It's not based on circumstance. It's not based on prevalence. It's not based on cost-benefit analysis. They just universally recommend something, not thinking about who needs it. And we cannot do medicine that way.
Right.
We can't do medicine where we are just blanketly giving everything that we can. We should be minimizing what we're giving, and we should be making sure it is for the person who needs it, which, according to the ACIP, would be under the risk group category.
Correct.
Not everybody needs to be getting a pneumococcal vaccine, everybody over 65. To do that universal recommendation because it's easy, that should make every single parent concerned.
Yeah, you're completely right. And with the hepatitis B vaccine, that's one of the main reasons why they universally recommended it. I remember the discussions way back, and they said, well, maybe we should just recommend it for newborn babies in the hospital born to high-risk mothers.
That makes more sense,
and they said, it is so politically incorrect to recommend a treatment like to a targeted group of kids, whether it's for, you know, socioeconomic status of the parents or lifestyle choices of the parents, you know, parents who are at risk of hepatitis B disease. They just said it felt so wrong to only recommend it to their babies. It's just, you're right. It's just easier to have a universal recommendation. We'll just recommend it to everybody because it's just, you're right. It's just plain easier. In fact, I'm trying to think. I can't think of any childhood vaccines that are targeted only to like a specific group of kids, unless it's like something for immunocompromised kids,
or
kids who have had their spleen removed after certain surgeries. There's a few little targeted things, but they're not targeted because of their ethnicity or their lifestyle or their socioeconomic status. So they couldn't bring themselves to make hepatitis B vaccine only targeted to certain groups
silly.
Like that.
So for hepatitis B, so instead of finding out who are the at-risk children that have either, you know, parent mothers with hepatitis B, you know, positive, or they're at risk of that in those circumstances, they're going to go ahead and universally mandate now because of schools 12 million doses a year, because if we're estimating about 4 yeah. million kids a year are getting three doses in their first year, yeah. 12 million doses yeah. of a vaccine every single year for the less than 1% or whatever that it is that could potentially yeah. be at risk for hepatitis B.
Right.
That is not how people should be doing medicine. Right. That is business.
Right.
And
absolutely.
I think that's the big issue, is the way that yeah. they are looking at medicine is not what is individual to you and how can I help you be the healthiest and safest you can be. It is how can I just make this easy, convenient, and get everybody to comply. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, they are really losing the trust of the public over time, which is the reason that we're all standing up. And I'm hoping is, you know, this is bringing attention to the public. The public should have zero trust in these regulatory agencies that are putting yeah. recommendations. Yeah. Again, they are recommending things because they are easy and convenient, not because your right. child needs them, not because your child is part of a group that would benefit from it. It's just because they're making everybody do it. And yeah. and we need to do an episode on what we were talking about earlier today, that, you know, what does it mean to be vaccinated? Yeah. Because yeah. that's the real argument here that we're looking at. It's just all or nothing. Yeah. You either comply or you don't. Yeah. And that's a scary place to be when you have so many doses on today's schedule.
Yeah, yeah, and I wonder, you know, where they say the seniors should now get the vaccine based on conversations with their clinicians. I wonder what doctors are now going to say. Now that it's not, you know, officially recommended for everybody, I feel like the doctors that are science-based will likely probably stop giving the vaccine, or at least maybe just put flyers out there letting people know the vaccine's there. But I mean, if a doctor is going to make a decision based on science, they should not even actively recommend pneumococcal vaccine.
You're right, they shouldn't anymore. Because there's no decrease in the cases of pneumonia, and 4%. Are the amount of pneumonia cases that are targeted by Prevnar 13.
Right. So I almost would say the good doctors, the doctors right. that makes, you know, scientific decisions based on research, should stop recommending it.
But
be interesting to see how many.
But what's really going to happen?
Right. They're just going to, I mean, if they're all recommending the flu shot with, you know, almost, you know, very little research to show that it works, they'll just keep recommending the pneumococcal vaccine as well.
Because it's an expensive vaccine.
It really goes hand in hand. Yeah.
And it's making the company money, and they've just gotten the public used to the idea of yeah. needing it.
Yeah.
And so they don't want all of a sudden for people to be questioning that.
I remember my father-in-law, for years, my wife and I would tell him, you know, stop getting the flu shot. You know, you don't really need it, and you're pretty healthy, and it's not going to work very well. But we also told him, you know, make sure you don't get the pneumococcal shot. Mm-hmm. Because it's probably not going to provide that benefit. We told him that, and he went out one day at the doctor, and he got the pneumococcal vaccine. He says he's never felt the same since. And that was a couple of years ago. Said it made him feel very sick, but he actually now kind of just feels a little off. Like starting that actual day, something feels off about how his mind is working and how he feels. And he personally attributes it to that. And which I'm very sad about. We really love him. He's a really wonderful person. But if the vaccine that had marginal benefit, if that really did it really did harm him that way, then that's a real shame.
I've heard several stories as well of elderly getting both pneumococcal and flu vaccine and having falls and later concussions and even death resulting within days of having that combination.
Yeah, because those shots can make you feel faint. Yeah,
right. Easily. And then some of these elderly patients are coming off of either a sickness or an illness or mm-hmm. a surgery or something, and they're still offering these to them in the hospital when their body is already weaker. And that's another thing to be concerned with, the way that they are pushing these vaccines at every opportunity. Are they really offering them at an opportunity that is best for the patient, or are they just trying to get them to get it? And, you know, again, is this a business or is this medicine the way that it's supposed to be? This has nothing to do with whether or not you believe in vaccines or think that some of them mm-hmm. work or even believe in the pneumococcal vaccine. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at the data and the science and you realize this is only going to help you in 4% of cases, that means almost not. So pneumonia, yes, is an awful thing to experience for people and it can be very risky, but having the Prevnar vaccine is not going to necessarily change that for 96% of people.
Right. And it's very concerning that the ACIP only voted to to like no longer actively recommend it and right. leave it optional. You know, if the ACIP was going to make these decisions based on science, then they should actually withdraw, you know, the vaccine from the, you know, from availability. I mean, but I can't imagine them actually doing that for something that's so profitable to the industry and supports the general medical industry in right. such a big way. Even though, you know, most of these doctors probably are not financially benefiting personally, some of these doctors, they're allowed to have stock in Pfizer, doctors that make these recommendations. I don't right. know if any of the current 14 members. People that voted, mm-hmm. I don't know if any of them currently do, but in the past, ACIP members have been allowed to carry stock in right. these companies. And one of those was
actually there at that meeting.
Oh, yeah?
Sitting in the seats, which is Paul Offit.
Okay.
Right. Who obviously had his patent in the rotavirus vaccine right. and at one point was on the ACIP committee right, a long
right,
time ago.
Right.
So he was there at this particular meeting. And it was really interesting to see representatives from the American Medical Association, yeah. from the Infectious Disease Society, all these different groups weighing in on their vote on whether or not this should be taken off the recommendation. Yeah. And one of these organizations said, we need to have the trust of the public based on research. We need to make research-driven right. decisions. And if the research shows this is not doing anything, how can we basically, in good conscience, continue to recommend it? And I think to myself, if only everything that they did was research-based, you know, they were looking for the trust of the public and they were thinking, if we keep this on the schedule with no change, this is kind of the wrong thing to do.
Yeah. And I mean, if this was a medication and the FDA, you know, came across new research that showed a medication was 4% effective, they would, you know, they would probably take it off the market. Right.
Right.
But I feel like in the climate of medicine today, I would say the use of this vaccine probably will not go down by much, the way most doctors will recommend vaccines based on past habits and past beliefs, past false beliefs, apparently. I don't know that this is going to decline much, and then everyone will be ready for Prevnar 20 mm-hmm. when it comes out. And is there going to be a Prevnar 90? I don't know how many. I think there's something like 90-some strains of pneumococcal.
Oh
I forget
God.
The exact number. But can you imagine doing that to your immune system?
Well, you're right on when you talk about the 13 strains. And I also agree with you that, you know, more is not necessarily better.
Right.
And when you're putting in something like this and forcing your body to have to go through the process, the immune response for every single one of these strains, I understand you want to do more strains to protect you from more strains, but also what does that do to your body? We can't just keep increasing them.
Yeah. And there is aluminum in this vaccine. People keep in mind, but yeesh.
And we're talking about millions and millions of people that have signed up, had to opt into this because their doctor told them to do it. And then over 4 or 5 years, they realize, oh, by the way, it didn't really have much benefit, but you got it anyway.
Yeah.
And you paid for it anyway. And they made a huge profit anyway.
Yeah. And we know the original Prevnar 7 triggered an increase in antibiotic resistant pneumococcal disease. The Prevnar 7 triggered an increase in strain 19A,
right.
which was very serious, very antibiotic resistant. So they threw strain 19A into Prevnar 13. But we know the more strains you add to the vaccine, that puts pressure on other strains to either resist the vaccine or other antibiotic strains that used to be rare. It makes them increase because you're getting rid of the vaccine-covered strains from the population. So it's like, it's interesting that this vaccine, at least in kids, reduces the circulating strains, but it brings out other strains, some other strains that are quiet and just hanging out at really low levels, brings them out, and some of them are you know, antibiotic resistant. And that's, again, another problem when you start providing a multi-strain vaccine that grows and grows and grows over the years.
And is everybody forgetting what the main goal should be, which is to be healthy?
Health and wellness.
Yeah. Like, well, shouldn't we have strong immune systems? We can't just have vaccines for everything that's out there. We have to teach our bodies to be strong enough to be able to fight this stuff. So your child's not getting pneumonia.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole goal. Don't just, how do we, you know, how do we keep your child from getting that strain? The whole idea would be like, no matter what strain it is, you want your child to be healthy enough to beat it off because we cannot keep making vaccines for every single thing and adding it to our body over and over. And we have no test for what that's going to do.
Well, hopefully people that attend Oprah's health and wellness tour will learn all kinds of healthy ways to stay well.
Unless the point of that health and wellness tour is to get your flu and pneumococcal shot. That's the wrong way to approach health. You know, again, like I always say, that's outside in.
Right.
And we need to look inside out because we only vaccinate for 16 diseases on the childhood schedule. There are more things than that that are out there.
Yeah.
There are more things we have to worry about.
Well, I love that. I love what Joshua Coleman's group is doing now, sending the V for Vaccine event organizers and local people in different states where Oprah's having her events. And people are showing up there with, you know, V for Vaccine signs, talking about their concerns about vaccines. And I heard at one of those events, Oprah showed up late to her event, so she wasn't already inside the building. So she had to actually walk through the whole crowd of V for Vaccine sign holders.
V
is for Vaccine. Yeah. She had to walk through that crowd and look around at that, the, you know, the vaccine signs as she was walking into her own event. And I hope that makes her stop and think. And as everyone starts showing up at every one of her events, it would be great to be able to get her to question her, you know, the people that set up this sponsorship. And gosh, that would be great if she pulled away from the sponsorship, realizing that it doesn't fit her passion and her mission for health and wellness, but with companies that, you know, that have the integrity that she stands for.
Well, in today's day and age, people don't protest anything, almost anything. People aren't outside in the cold in winter standing out with signs unless it's important.
Yes, yeah.
So maybe there is something to be said for paying attention to just the fact that there are people there. Why are these people here? What are they protesting? Yeah. You have to wonder, because there's no way that you can just sort of let that go and think to yourself, oh, it's just another protest. It's not, people don't do that anymore. Yeah. So the fact that people are doing that, I hope that by itself really wakens people up to kind of going, what's this all about? What are these people out here for? Because everybody knows how lazy we are as a society these days.
Yeah,
nobody's coming in. Nobody wants to be outside. Everybody wants to be at home on Netflix. Yeah. So the fact that everybody's out there, it should be enough to make Oprah or anybody else wonder what's going on.
Yeah, this was crazy, Melissa. I mean, I will be totally honest. I had no idea that any one company kind of like went through so many different lawsuits and so many different different punishments and penalties. I mean, you know, you hear about every, you know, pharmaceutical company, you know, having to pay out damages because a drug did this or that.
Right.
But the different labels in this article, you know, according to this article, how they label just the different ways that Pfizer was found guilty of wrongdoing and had to settle and pay out damages. That's pretty staggering. And I don't think you even read everything.
No, I mean, there's just so much to go through. I just tried to summarize
it. Yeah, yeah.
But the amazing thing is if I heard all this stuff about one company, and I found out they make vaccines on the schedule I'm giving to my child, I guarantee you I would think twice about looking into it more. And people forget, again, that the companies making childhood vaccines are also pharmaceutical companies that have been punished both criminally and civilly in federal court for wrongdoing, for unethical behavior, for false and misleading claims, for injuring and endangering the public, and for hiding product safety.
Wow.
And I mean, this is not just unique to Pfizer. This is happening across the board. But the companies that we should be concerned with on our issue, these same companies that make childhood vaccines, this should make every single parent kind of go, wait a second, if all this is happening in one company, and I believe it's happening in one company, this is not news to a lot of people, but maybe they're forgetting these are the same companies that are also making the vaccines that you're giving your child. And we're not just giving your child one of, but because we have 69 doses on the schedule, we're talking about something that should be concerning most parents. Where are these coming from? Where are the vaccines coming from? And what is the integrity of the company that is giving to them, especially when we're looking at mandates and laws? Once things are mandated, once we have laws that are forcing these on your child or they lose the right to education, that's when you have to look and go, what's the integrity of that company?
Yeah, if these were optional and you talk to your doctor and decide whether or not you're going to get a certain vaccine and you can use this information as part of your decision. When you have no choice, you know, right. You have to keep your kid out of school. You know, if you're not going to, you know, give them the product made by a company like this, then to me that's very sad and that's problematic and that really crosses the line. If you can't, you know, go to your job in the hospital because they've mandated this vaccine.
Right.
If you, that's you're right. That brings it to a whole new level that hopefully the public will stand up against.
Because this is a consumer issue.
Right.
And yeah. As consumers, we have a right to quality products.
Yes, we do.
And they're obviously not presenting that. And they're not being truthful with the public, which I think is a big issue that we have as well. Yeah. So we'll go into, I want to go into Merck and GlaxoSmithKline, both of those companies as their...
Merck hasn't done anything wrong, I'm sure.
We'll do some deep dives on that. And you know what? You guys should be doing that at home too. You should be looking into these companies because, you know, again... Maybe your friends and family and coworkers that are fully on board with following the schedule, maybe they kind of have presented to you that they have distrust in pharmaceutical companies, but they are not seeing the connection. So do your own deep dives, find out more about these companies and be able to come to them with information that shows, hey, look, if this company's doing it over here, you can pretty much guess correctly that they're also doing it over here. And same thing with the CDC. If we did that podcast on the Coca-Cola issue.
Right.
If they're being corrupt in their actions here, what makes you think they're not doing it over here?
Yeah.
It's all about integrity of companies and these people should be held accountable as well as Oprah.
Yeah.
She's putting her name on it. I'm sorry, but she needs to be accountable for being associated with a company that is doing this type of stuff, including testing on children without their parents' consent. I mean, that's crazy. And what if she doesn't know that? She needs to know these things before she aligns herself with a company like this.
And we'll give you a link to this article. It's called, it's from Corporate Research Project. It's called Pfizer Corporate Rap Sheet, and you'll be able to read it yourself.
That's right. And we'll go into more of these in the future as well.
Yeah. And again, you know, we're super excited about the upcoming tour, the podcast tour.
What? You're going on tour?
You're coming too.
Oh, and, that's right.
And so again, you know, we'll give you links to, our upcoming fundraisers and eventually when we do have the signups for our podcast tour, we will give you the links to those as well on our website. Don't forget that. Anything else?
Sign us off.
You're done?
Dr. Bob.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us on the Vaccine Conversation.
The information in this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as medical advice. Always consult your healthcare professional for information on vaccines and infectious diseases.